Actually, I don't know this thought about this topic a couple of weeks ago, so there are quite a few commonalities between us and New Zealand and our Western Island brothers. Geographically, we're quite close, much like Texas and Maine. We've got pretty similar accents, just like Texas and Maine. But the main thing is, we have a reliance on pastoral-based agriculture. Now, I'm going to give you a little bit of explanation about that, because we're quite proud of it being almost the most efficient in the world. Now, the reason for that is we have no subsidies. Now, what I mean by no subsidies, there's no man in a business suit coming around and paying you for things you don't do. It's sink or swim. We have a very wide range of climates, from incredibly dry requiring irrigation to incredibly wet, 4.5 meters a year. Very wide range of soil types and soil peat concentrations. We're entirely pasture-based. The cows are outside all year round. This means that we have a very wide range of pea losses, coming up to 12 kilos of pea per hectare per year, but on average, it's about 1.5. But we've got pea-limited fresh waters, okay? So we need to restrict that pea loss. Now, I'm going to give you a hypothesis. You can read it. Now, it requires, though, to do fully costed mitigation strategies. Remember, we don't have those subsidies. And we need a range of options to fit to a particular farm or catchment, because there's a very wide range of those. But if you don't do this, your audience is just going to turn around and say, no, what are we doing? Did he say anything useful? No, it's going to be public. So I'm going to simplify things as much as I can. You may not agree with these classifications, but I'm doing it in terms of simple farm management strategies at the source. Stuff or amendments, I've automatically done that. They're non-toxic, they're readily available. Amendments in the field and at the edge of the field. Now, wide range again, and so I'm going to rank them according to their effectiveness and cost. I'm going to do it in a simple traffic signal sort of arrangement, okay? So, green, good, go for it. Orange or amber, now you're starting to think about your wallet. Red, you've got rocks in your head. Okay, feel free to fall asleep if you've seen this before, okay? But, very general increase in pea loss with Olsen pea, and I'm giving you one of our guidelines. It could be anyone's guideline, but the point is that there's an increase, and what we do is a disparity with yield, and so we always recommend that you keep your soil pea within that range where it's not going to cause excessive algal growth and it's still going to give you yield. But the problem is, of course, it's always soil specific, so there's always another soil that's going to leak a hell of a lot more than another one. And so here's the very first analysis of this. Makes very good cost, sense cost-wise, but the effectiveness depends on the soil that you've got. Another one, low water soluble pea fertilizers. Here's a paired catchment or paired watershed analysis. Don't know what that means. You're just comparing two or multiple watersheds at a treatment period before you impose that treatment, and then afterwards, the two regression lines, the change in slope gives you the effectiveness of that mitigation strategy. In this particular case, it's around 40% decrease. However, there's a caveat. Using particularly low water soluble peat fertilizers, such as phosphate rock, are restricted to certain soil types. You need the correct pH and acid pH to dissolve that calcium peat. You also need high enough rainfall to leach it out into the soil. As a consequence, that's a little bit restricted in terms of effectiveness, but it makes a hell of a lot of sense in terms of cost effectiveness, because on a per kilo of pea basis, it's the same price as about triple superphosphate, at least it is down there. So, effluent management. For us, effluent is a very dilute slurry that comes from washdown water in the dairy shed. Less than 1% solid, okay? We apply that to land, but quite commonly, the method to do that is via a rotating boom. It spits it out at about 130 millimetres an hour. And you can imagine on either wet soils or soils with restricted infiltration, you get quite a lot of runoff occurring with that. You can also get bypass flow, as Pete mentioned earlier, down into what we have as mold drains that lead into tile drains and then direct loss into a stream. The simple fix for that is to apply little and often and to avoid those times of year when you've got saturated soils. To do it little and often, you have to change your infrastructure away from one of those rotating booms into a low rate system that delivers at about, say, less than 10 millimetres an hour. Hence, it's a little bit more costly, but it's very effective. You can decrease your PLOS maybe 50-70% on a farm basis. Restricted grazing. For us, that means that during the time of year when we have poorer or less pasture production in winter, what we can do is put them on a forage crop. We just feed them maintenance requirements over a 3 to 4 hour period. This is quite effective in terms of decreasing feed losses. If you imagine there are fewer dung packs, there is less treading and soil disturbance, and so there's about, on average, a 30% decrease for both cattle and sheep. However, it's reasonably labour intensive, and it also requires infrastructure for you to have those animals to go to another part of the farm where they're not going to have problems in terms of runoff. So, effective, but in terms of P, rocks in your head. Another one, tile drains. We've heard a little bit about them in the previous speaker. A little bit different though in New Zealand and Australia. What we do is get, they may be down about that deep, okay? We fill them with a backfill, commonly of say scoria or grey wacky, allows good hydraulic conductivity, great at getting water out. What we do though, is, well, why not fill it with a peat-solving material? And so we've done that, and we've got some pretty wise farmers that have been doing it for about 20 years. And we've come along and we've tested those in comparison to some of those grey wacky and controlled ones without that peat-solving material. And you get very effective pea retention, but it's affected by siltation, as most drains are. But most drains are rejuvenated every 20 years anyway. And so it makes sense that if you're close to these, one of these areas where you've got these peat sorbent materials, to be using that. Very effective, but if you're not close to those areas, you've got to account for things like cartage, installation, and rejuvenation, which means that it's not that cost effective. Alum. Right. A little bit effective in terms of, you know, we've applied rates going up to 80 kilograms of aluminium per hectare. We get decreases no more than about, say, 30%. However, and I might go into this a little bit further later on, we do require a stand-off period. There is some evidence to show that there is, well, rumen biochemistry is affected, especially in young heifers. So it requires, say, 14 days, but it's going to be effective for up to 2.5 months. So maybe 30% effective. That's 22 kilograms of alum, though. Do the costs on that, it's a no-go. Bauxite, used widely in Western Australia. It's the precursor for alumina, and hence aluminium or aluminum. It's a very strong peat-solving material. It is slightly alkaline, though. So if you apply that directly to pasture, it's going to increase the rumen pH, and it's going to die. So it makes no sense to be using it there. But you can use it in a cropping system, and they do that in Western Australia, and the soils where they're either sands or potholes, very low in iron and aluminium, and hence leaks a lot of peat, you get decreases in the range of 50 to 90%. Very effective. Cost effectiveness means, though, that they are restricted to those particular soil types, and there's no real advantage of using them in others. Buffer strips. I've got a little bit of BMI on it about these ones. They're always restricted by topography. It doesn't matter how wide they are, there's always convergence occurring. Here's a perfect example for you. Might be good in terms of having cropland and grass buffer strips, but think about it. If you're producing something from pasture, do you really expect something by pasture to retain it? No, it doesn't. So, rocks in the head in both accounts. But there is a beneficial effect in that because you're fencing the stream off. And that's the major effect. Here's some evidence for this. A particular site, that's not actually a stream, it's an area that little deer has decided to make into a clay pen. We fenced that off after 4 years, and we've seen a very dramatic decrease in terms of total peak, to the point where it meets one of our policy makers' arbitrary guideline. So, very effective, but fencing costs. And so it's middle ground. Sorbers in and around stream. So these are some of those, that's Steel Mountain State in combination with a couple of others. Put in some geotextile cloth, we call them peacocks. After the idea was we put them in and take them out, but both smell better than my socks, and they'll be effective at decreasing P in the stream. Well, it turns out they are, but they're only effective up to about 20 litres per second of these hydraulic issues associated with those, even though you're putting them in a herringbone structure to create turbulence. The point is, though, that you can utilise lower energy hydraulics in areas such as tracks and lanes, going to or from a dairy shed to remove the pea. And so in this particular case, we decreased the pea loss by about 90% going into one particular catchment by focusing on a hotspot or critical source area where we were able to utilise that stack. But although it may be effective, it's hellishly costly. Because we're not a very big country, we've only got one steel mill, it's way up in the North Island, and you've got to transport that around, doesn't make sense. So, irrigation and water use. Well, in New Zealand, what we commonly do is we've got flood irrigation, but what happens is that of the inflow water, you commonly get about 10 to 50% going off as outflow or outwash. That carries a lot of pea and other contaminants with it. The New Zealand option is pretty simple, don't overwater. In Australia, accounting for water is much more profitable. Now I say that because for a typical 100 hectare dairy farm, your annual water costs are about $50,000 a year. You put a reuse system in, like the one that I'm just explaining here, and so water comes in from your stream, you use flood irrigation, you collect that outwash, you recycle it via a pond into another part of the farm and put it onto another area. You put that infrastructure in, it costs about $50,000. You annualise it over, say, 10 or 20 years. You're actually making a profit after about 4 years. Makes very good sense. Natural and constructive wetlands. Fantastic for nitrogen, but they require an area or a focal point to put these in. You've got to have an adequate size to decrease both sedimentation and P loss. And you've got to account for that in terms of lost productivity. They only last for maybe 10, 20 years, depending on the size of them, because of that sedimentation issues. So that means, in terms of P loss, no, they're not that good. They silt up, and then they come, obviously they're reductive already, and so you decrease your sediment loss, but you're getting release of dissolved people. So, the reason why I showed you all those traffic lights is because I didn't want to go through all these numbers. But, I'm going to show you a test of that hypothesis. One particular catchment in the South Island, Waikakahi, might be difficult for some to say, but it's a very intensively dairy farm catchment, very profitable. It's very flat though, and dominated by flood irrigation. Now, in terms of these mitigation strategies, there are only a few that we can use. Obviously, you go to port sites in Australia, it's not New Zealand, we can't use that. Buffer strips, totally unrealistic, simply because, it's pasture. Grass buffer strip, no, it doesn't make sense. Tile drains, no, it's flat. Flood irrigated, doesn't need drainage. Restricted grazing, maybe not. The ones that we did choose to use, and the farmers chose to use these as well, was to have an optimum soil test deconcentration, to utilise pre-fencing and decrease direct deposition by cattle, and also to improve their water use and recycling. Here's what's happened over the last 10 years. There has been a significant decrease, not only in the load, that's the grey bars, and there's a few more for the left which I haven't included, but also in the frequency of high peak events. Now, we can't say specifically that it's due to one specific management practice, but we can say that over that 10-year period, we've had an increase in spring fencing from 78 up to 98%. We've decreased our fertiliser use. That's having a slow effect and decrease on the soil test P concentrations. But the main one is that we altered our flood irrigation practices so we don't have that outwash occurring. And all this is set against a production increase of around 40%. So if you were to, not only are you decreasing your pig loss, but the story is even better in terms of dollars per kilogram of pig loss. So, in summary, in our unsubsidised farming scenario, the adoption of our mitigation strategies depends highly upon doing that cost-benefit ratio, but we need to have a wide range of mitigations to get horses to course. You've also got to consider, and I know this is a phosphorus symposium, but you've got to consider things like nitrogen, and so some strategies, although they may not be cost-effective for a pig, may be useful for nitrogen. Now, if you do that, all well and good, but you may have been taking notice of a number of green, orange and red lights, and so here's my generalised conclusion that for us, mitigation strategies are most effective at the source, they're less effective using in-field amendments, and least effective when you're using edge-of-field strategies. The horse is already gone, bolted.
Questions, so if there's some questions.
Richard, you told that according to your analysis, the regulation that is placed on farm level are most effective.
Yeah.
But what if the phosphorus is already in the soil? I mean, what if you have had a large stream of phosphorus surpluses and accumulation in your soil? What are your options there?
Well, for us, I mean, the soil only accounts for maybe 50% of pea losses, okay? You've got losses via the dung, you've got losses via the fertilizer component, and you've also got losses via effluent that happens to be the effluent well, and also losses via actually the grace pasture itself. When it's worn, the macrolls are exposed, that's the loss of control, loss of getting released. And so we concentrate on other things like grazing, using our effluent much better. And with time, decreasing the P inputs to, we recognise that's going to take time, but these other things can probably help a lot better and a lot quicker.
We're seeing like a 20 or 25% reduction, but we're working on kind of the perfect hill slope, you know, where
sheep flow.
Yeah, we've got really good sheep flow and everything. And but I just wanted to say that it can, you know, buffer strips can work and they can be cost effective. And that's when you're, in our case, we're applying the poultry litter to the pastures. And so there's different definitions of what you're calling buffer strip. That unfertilized zone, basically, can help a lot if you get
it. I'd say that, sheep flow is an anomaly. With increasing scale, it gets less and less likely. And so, that might be fine on a hill slope, but if you increase into a 7-2 or the stream capture, no. I have to disagree very much. Yeah, it might be very cost effective for that for a small scale. And also, you've got to consider that under a grey situation, we get a lot of compaction on our topsoils, and so the likelihood of having subsurface flow, which may be the case in that area, where you've got your topsoil being applied and being soiled on root to tree subsurface, maybe not overlay flow, the opposite situation. We get some compaction, increases conversions because animals like to go towards those wet areas using the toilet stops. And again, you get conversions, overland flow, bypasses the buffer strip straight into it.
Any other questions?
Okay, just clarify.
Thanks a lot, Richard.